And, you know, again, I think there's a real elitism of, you know, especially among WBAI type listeners, and it's like there's.
But sir, aren't you generalizing too when you say things like that?
Well, look, okay, maybe I am. Maybe I am. That's true. But I'm pointing out a specific instance. What if instead of said redneck, what if you said, I'm trying to think of an equivalent for another minority. What if you said coon or something like that? I mean, what you know, there's a lot of, it's like the old thing about, you know, the South, you know, those prejudices are ridiculous, and it's just dividing people. In other words, you want to be inclusive, not exclusive, and not elitist. The thing is this: I think people. I'm not accusing you of anything except you wanted somebody to make a little ways.
I'm kind of losing you. Can you? Kind of.
Yeah, you're
wrap
right.
Up
I,
the,
I am digressing.
The
I am digressing. I really didn't mean to talk this long. I'm just saying this. I'm saying, don't be such a snob. In other words, realize that there's people who legitimately don't believe what you believe, and they're not rednecks, and they're not garbage, and they feel that the law is necessary simply as it's reactionary. It's a reaction to the flag burning. And don't mock them because their way of thinking hasn't progressed to as far as the 21st century.
Right. Well, have I mocked them? I wasn't aware of that.
Well, okay.
I referred to rednecks, but there are rednecks in the world.
Smarmy, playing that country swing record is really there's something really smarmy about it. If you use that word,
but that's a fact of history.
Just remember a way of life. Is involved. There's a lot of different things, and if you pull out one thing and say and expose it as rotten, well, maybe a way of life has many different factors, and there may be good things and bad things, and you should point out the bad things, but also remember that it also is part of a way of thinking that if you just were to all of a sudden people were just to pull it out from under people, that the whole thing would collapse. You know, try to educate people rather than just be smarmy about it.
Well, okay, you've used that word many times. But,
yeah, I know because that's the gist of it.
Okay, well,
don't be self-righteous. Don't be righteous.
I'm trying not to be. I'm trying not to be smart or anything like that.
I'm no qualms that you really. You just wanted some feedback. And I thought I'd make a few.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling.
Okay.
Okay. Our phone number is 279-3400. And it's just about 25 minutes to 3 o'clock, and I don't want to wait any longer with the Joey Johnson recording that we have here, so I want to go straight into that, then we'll come back to the phones. Again, this recording was made on Sunday evening at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. Joey Johnson, the infamous flag burner, guy who started this whole thing. Well, of course, he didn't start the whole thing, but he was the person that destiny threw in front of the wheels of justice or whatever, however you want to make that analogy. And he spoke at the State University at Stony Brook on Sunday about what he believes in, what it's all about to him, and I think it deserves a listen, and afterwards we will take some more of your phone calls.
I want to start off by saying October 28th, when this, I guess people have been following it, know a little bit like what went down and stuff around this new Federal Flag Protection Act of 1989 that went into effect on October 28th at 12:01 a.m., and it was righteously, I believe, met with mass defiance in a number of places throughout the country. Hundreds of, in fact, thousands of flags went up in flames. In Seattle, Washington, the organization that Dave belongs to, the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, Anti-Imperialists, napalmed 1,000 American flags in a demonstration. And people might have seen that on TV. They went down to the federal post office And I saw the clip on the evening news where it showed them bringing down the flag down the pole and lighting it up and then running it back up the pole. And I thought that was a great way to, like, put the stars and stripes up. And, you know, this is extremely significant, I think, what happened, what these Vietnam veterans did, because I know from the last year around this Supreme Court case, both with Dred Scott Tyler, the black revolutionary artist in Chicago who put the American flag on the floor in an art installation called What is the Proper Way to Display the American Flag? And with my Supreme Court case, there was a real deliberate attempt from the various highest levels of government to try to use these veterans of different imperialist wars that the United States has been engaged in to try to use them to bash us or to politically encircle and suppress us and to intimidate us and say that there's all these flag worshiping veterans out here, and if you go up against this red, white, and blue madness, if you go up against this atmosphere of forced patriotism that we're trying to create, then we're going to use them, we're going to mobilize them as a mob to come out and suppress you. And both Dred Scott and I had received numerous threats from these veterans organizations, and there was a deliberate mobilization of some of these John Wayne types, some of these Rambos. These are the veterans that went to Vietnam and enjoyed bombing the villages. You know, these are the reactionary diehard types that got into the slaughters that were the standard operating procedure for U.S. imperialism when they tried to carry out their domination of Vietnam. These were the people that are proud of the fact that 2.5 million Vietnamese and another million Indochinese were slaughtered in the course of over a decade-long effort by United States imperialism to bludgeon the Vietnamese people and Indochinese people into submission. And people like Dave, they don't even really exist. You know, that's the mind fuck that they're trying to run on people. Or Dave is one of these people that's having adjustment problems. You know, he just ain't with it yet. He hasn't gotten with the whole, you know, Rambo mentality that they're trying to run on people with their China Beach and their Rambo movies and this, you know, honor the veteran, you know, so that they can use you again. Mind fuck that they've been running on people ever since the end of the Vietnam War, and especially in the last 10 years, has been very deliberate, you know, ideological campaigns from the highest levels of government to run this on people. So people like Dave ain't even supposed to exist. So I thought it was great on October 30th, you know, not only had 2 days before on October 28th that these vets in Seattle napalmed the American flags, but when we did the same thing in New York on October 28th, went out and did a mass flag burning, we called it an exorcism of forced patriotism, we couldn't get arrested. You know, we wanted to get arrested. We wanted to deliberately defy the law, take us back to the Supreme Court, you know, show how you can overturn Texas v. Johnson, my original Supreme Court case, and still try to put your message out to the people of the world that this is the country of freedom of expression, of political tolerance, that you don't suppress political dissenters. We wanted to challenge the government of this country to do that, you know. In fact, the new federal flag law that they passed calls for expediting to the Supreme Court a first test case that they can get to try to overturn Texas v. Johnson. So I thought it was great when we went down to Washington, D.C., since we couldn't get arrested in New York for defying this law. We said, well, let's just take it right to the steps of the Capitol. You know, let's just, like, go right up in their face with it. So we dressed up like yuppies, Dave, myself, Dred Scott, an artist from Chicago, and Sean Eichmann, a woman artist and a member of Refuse and Resist from New York. And we went down to the steps of the Capitol. And we came, we saw, we burned. You know, we did it again. And I think it was really great, in particular, that Dave was there, because it's not like when the newscasters reported the napalming of the 1,000 American flags in Seattle that they said, now, wait a minute, we've been lying to you all along and presenting a distorted or warped picture of the veterans in this country. You know, we've been telling you that they're all flag worshippers and they're all intoxicated with this mindless Rambo patriotism, but we left out a section of the veterans. These veterans that got radicalized through their whole experience in Vietnam. These veterans that came to hate the government that put them through this patriotic indoctrination from kindergarten to boot camp and then sent them over there to commit all these mindless slaughters and then came back hating the government that sent them there to do that. We've been lying to you. We haven't told you about these radical veterans. They didn't do that. You know, they just had to matter-of-factly report on October 28th when the vets napalmed the flags in Seattle. In their words, one newscaster said, the Federal Flag Protection Act went into effect tonight. Vietnam veterans burned the flag against forced patriotism, and there were flag burnings from sea to shining sea. You know, they just had to report it like that. So even more, we wanted to go into their face. We wanted to put it in their face and go right to the steps of the Capitol and, you know, defy their law. And that's what we did on October 30th. And now we got a brand new Supreme Court case. And more than that, we got, you know, an even stronger basis, I think, for there to be much greater debate throughout society about why is the government trying to, like, essentially, like, force the flag on people. What is this whole thing, this specter of these comparisons to Nazi Germany becoming more and more real, where they're threatening imprisonment and attacks on people who go up against their national emblem. I think, you know, yesterday people saw the news, you know, because I want to speak to what I think is underlying all this and why it is that they're trying to force the flag on people and, you know, what it's a sign of. I think if people saw yesterday on the news in Malta when Bush and Gorbachev got together for this summit at sea, it was a very stormy situation in the harbor there. There's turbulent seas all throughout the Malta harbor. Winds were gusting and blowing, you know, very intensely. And I don't know how many people saw the news coverage, but it was really, you know, somewhat of a dangerous situation to send a motor launch, you know, out into the water. But nonetheless, Bush was sent out to the American frigate or the American destroyer that was sitting in the harbor. And as you know, Gorbachev was also positioned on a Soviet destroyer. And it just struck me when I watched this going on in the news, you know, how deliberately they choreographed these summit meetings to put forward a certain ideological message, you know. And I thought the message was with this summit, like, even though the world is extremely turbulent place right now, you know, and far from peace breaking out all over the world, it's very volatile situations in many different parts of the world, that what they're trying to drive home to people with this summit is that these two great powers are going to meet here, you know, at this summit meeting at Malta, and they're going to control the outcome of things. It's completely in their hands, and that what you have is them with their great warships doing essentially what's referred to in military terms as a stand down. You know, and them facing off against each other, these two great powers, and the coming together of their minds, and that's the decisive, you know, question here. That's the critical thing in terms of how things are going to change in the world. But, and it was heavy because yet they sent Bush's launch out into these very turbulent seas, and I think actually subjected him to some personal risk so that this choreography could come off without a hitch. You know, and I'm sure he got seasick in it, but I think beyond that, you know, in my view, there's turbulent seas throughout the world that threaten to disrupt, you know, their plans for domination and imperialist maneuvering and advancing the interests of both their empires. And in my view, I think what's at the bottom of this forced patriotism thing here in the U.S. is that we live in a sick and dying empire that's desperately clutching at its symbols. And I want to go back to another bit of imperialist choreography, which was the Republican National Convention in 1984 when Reagan was being renominated, because that's where all this really began in terms of this particular, you know, this focused attempt, I think, to rehabilitate the American people to the whole concept of patriotism. Because Republican National Convention 1984, when Reagan was being renominated, the theme of it was new patriotism, bringing back America prouder, stronger, and greater. There was red, white, and blue flags, balloons, everything. The streets were lined with American flags. I think it was somewhat of an American Nuremberg rally, you know, trying to rehabilitate the American people to the whole concept of love for the flag, love for the country, which the rulers of this country had to admit was something that suffered, a concept that suffered serious damage ever since the end of the Vietnam War. And this is something that they've had big problems with for a number of years. And I think the Republican Convention was an attempt to try to reverse those verdicts, to try to turn the situation around. And in addition to this theme of new patriotism, If people think back, well, this was right after the U.S.'s invasion of Grenada. It was right after the threats against Nicaragua to say uncle or to face the same thing. It was right after Reagan's little jokes about having outlawed the Soviet Union and the bombing was going to begin in 5 minutes. So it was quite a tense situation in the world, and I don't think that they were trying to whip up this new patriotism for no reason. I think it was very conscious and deliberate and calculated. So the whole point of going to Dallas, we in the Revolutionary Communist Youth Brigade, we definitely wanted to be there. We thought it was our internationalist duty, like, to call out, you know, Reagan and this whole Rambo America Uberalis mentality that was being pumped out of that convention. But there was also a number of other, like, youth, about 150 that were in the demonstration from a lot of different political trends. And I think the thing that united everyone was wanting to go up into the face of this whole outpouring of American vicious American chauvinism and nationalism and challenge it and say that these people don't represent, you know, the thinking of a whole lot of people in this country, because that was the whole point of the convention, to get over with this mandate of the people, you know, that Reagan had the blessing of all the people in this country to do whatever heinous crimes or invasions were to follow. So, you know, what sharper way to do that than to burn the American flag, you know? I mean, that's what I think was extremely effective about what we did, was that it actually did pierce some of this Rambo America Uberalis theme and choreography of this convention very effectively. And the international news media that was assembled there, the cameramen from Japan, from Italy, from Rome, from Mexico City, shot it out on the wires. They trained their cameras on the burning flag remnants on the ground, and it went out over the wires internationally. You know, this act of burning the American flag, I think, has international communicability. You know, people throughout the world can understand it, even if they speak different languages or wherever they're at in the world. You know, this act of burning the flag is something that people don't understand. And I think it did convey that within the belly of the beast, so to speak, there's some people here that hate the madness that this system has brought down on people throughout the world. And the other thing about burning the flag in Dallas was, you have to look at the fact that it just isn't something that goes on here, but it's something that goes on in many parts throughout the world when people rise up and they want to make a statement of intense hatred or show their condemnation or their outrage and their anger, you know, how infuriated they are at the vicious regimes, the death squads, the brutal dictatorships, the starvation, the famine, the suffering that this system of imperialism backs up throughout the world. When they want to show that and they want to do it vividly, one of the first things they do, they go out into the streets in a demonstration. They're going to have an uprising, whether it's the students in Seoul, South Korea, or people in San Salvador, or people in Peru, or Palestine, or South Africa, or Brazil, or Argentina, or countless places throughout the world that if I stayed here, it would take me like hours to like run them down. Egypt, Brazil, Guatemala, Honduras, Haiti, name it. When people want to go out and they want to make an intense, you know, a furious statement, their hatred for this, what this system has done to people, have burned the American flag. You know, that's the way it is. You know, and that's what I call 1,000 points of light. You know, and I think that this is an excellent situation that not only, you know, is this going on throughout the world, but that people can see that, like here, as I say, within the belly of the beast, is some people that feel that way. And I think what the events of the last year have shown, in particular the last few months, is that these views can become contagious. Oh, the reactionary attacks that the government is bringing down on the people has only brought forth more resistance. You know, it wasn't just myself. I want to bring out that was like burning the flag on July 4th this past year, after the Supreme Court brought down its Webster decision, further restricting women's rights to abortion. You know, if people think back on July 4th, this past July 4th, there were women in a number of cities in this country that went out and burned the American flag. In Boston, Minneapolis, Indianapolis, San Francisco, New York, and about 8 or 10 other cities. Buffalo, I can't remember them all. And I thought that was great. You know, and I was thinking about it as I was looking at it, you know, a lot of these women must be feeling like their so-called this July 4th being Independence Day, that their independence must be pretty vacuous, you know, pretty meaningless in a country that is on top of all the other degradation that women are subjected to in this society, that the state is going to further put these restrictions on their reproductive systems and tell them, you know, that you're basically going to be a breeder or control their lives by controlling their reproductive systems. And I thought it was excellent that these women went out and burned the American flag, you know, as one expression of their hatred for this. And I think that you have to see that this American flag is flying over an American nightmare, American dream for some, American nightmare for many more in this country and throughout the world. And I think that once people get a glimpse of that, you know, once people, and this is what's happened in the whole course of this last year, since this case was brought to the Supreme Court, that there's been greater debate over these questions than any time since the 60s. And that's an excellent situation, I believe. That more people are starting to get a glimpse that, yes, this is the flag that flew over the genocide of Native American people. This is the flag that was carried by the 7th Cavalry when they went in to massacre the Sioux Indians at Wounded Knee. You know, this is the flag that did fly from the stern of slave ships through the Middle Passage that brought black people here in chains and shackles, you know, and subjected them to endless repression and suffering and literally enslavement, you know, right down to their modern forms of enslavement and captivity in this country today, where they're kept in lockdown in the inner cities of this country, in the ghettos, and routinely shot down by the hundreds every year in this country by the police, and it's always called justifiable homicide. You know, this is the flag that is like issued, it's standard issue to these racist mobs, like in Bensonhurst, you know, that carried it along with their watermelons when they were proud of the murder of Yusuf Hawkins. This is the flag that is flying over the detention camps, the internment camps for immigrants who are fleeing these death squads and fleeing the starvation that the United States is directly responsible for in Central America and Mexico. And now the flag flies over these detention camps, these concentration camps that they're holding them in South Texas. This is the flag that is flying over all that. So I think it's a great thing that in their quest, in their desperate necessity to try to bring about an atmosphere of patriotic flag worshiping and forced obedience and forced patriotism and people saluting the flag and hating who they're told to hate, you know, when they're told to hate them. You know, that's what I think is the bottom line behind all this forced patriotism and this fascist flag amendment and this fanaticism with the flag. I don't think it's just Bush trying to make up for some coup plots that turned into coup flops in Panama. I think we got to look a lot deeper than that. I don't think it's just the demagoguery of some politicians worried about their conservative constituencies back out in Arkansas. I think this thing I'm saying about a sick and dying empire desperately clutching at its symbols is real. And I think that they know that their system is in a severe crisis today, and that they face many challenges throughout the world and many places that threaten to erupt completely out of control. And that this thing I'm saying about needing people to hate who they're told to hate when they're told to hate them, that if tomorrow the United States decides that the government in El Salvador is just too shaky, despite their 70,000 people that have been massacred by the Salvadoran death squads directly backed up by the United States, despite the billions of dollars that have been poured into the regime there and arming and training it, that they need to directly send in the United States military troops to back up that vicious regime. Or if they decide that they need to invade into Nicaragua to overthrow the Sandinistas and to put in a government more subservient to the United States' domination of that region, then they're the ones that are desperately needing people hating who they're told to hate when they're told to hate them. That's the situation they confront. And I think not just in Central America, but in many corners of the earth, in the Middle East, in South Africa, in the Philippines, things threaten to explode completely out of control for them. And I think they threaten to explode out of control for them right here in the belly of the beast. And they need to force the flag on people here now more than ever. So I think it's an excellent situation that all this is going on, and that they're so weak and that they're so desperate that they're trying to, you know, as I say, force the flag on people. And from my standpoint, you know, we want to turn up the heat, not just on the flag, but on the whole system of U.S. imperialism that the flag represents. And tick-tock, tick-tock, time's running out for it. And I think we need revolution to do away with this system and all the crimes and all the oppression it brings down on people all over the world. So that's what I'm shooting for, not just, you know, burning the flag, but for the day we can bring down the empire that the flag represents. Thank you.
and it's the band called Chicago Transit Authority, who became the band called Chicago and put out all kinds of albums, but that was their first one back in the 60s. And we heard Prologue August 29th, 1968, followed by Someday also on that same date. And that was preceded by an address by Joey Johnson at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. And he was speaking about flag burning, what motivated him to begin this this form of protest, and why he is continuing to do it to this day. And again, our thanks to the Student Activities Board at the State University at Stony Brook and WUSB in Stony Brook for their help in bringing that to us here at WBAI in New York. My name is Emmanuel Goldstein. I'm filling in for Tom Whisker. We'll be here for about another half hour or so. And we're taking your calls at 279-3400. Now, there was a piece not too long ago in Harper's Magazine called When is a Flag Desecrated? And this is from Scenarios and Questions for Anti-Flag Desecration Lawmakers. It's a pamphlet written by Ken Knowlton and Barbara Bean Knowlton and published in Merrimack, New Hampshire. Now, this pamphlet lists actions that could be considered illegal under the flag-burning bill passed by Congress in October. And it was part of it was reprinted in Harper's Magazine. And you should listen up, because if you do one of these things, you could be in a lot of trouble. So take notes. Get a pen and pencil or paper or whatever. And feel free to expand upon these ideas, too, so that we know that we're not going to break any laws here by accident or on purpose. Okay, be careful if you do any of the following. Someone makes good pictures of U.S. flags, one or two-sided, on paper or cloth, by color photography, color photocopy, or a computer within one of those neat inkjet printers, and then publicly tramples and burns the pictures. Okay, let's see. An iconoclast uses small cloth pictures of the flag as handkerchiefs and distributes large ones as blankets to New York's homeless. Yep, desecration of the flag there. How about this? A protester projects a picture of a flag onto a white wall and then hurls mud or paint onto the image. A flag is mounted over the screen of a TV set in a darkened room, and videotapes are played, clearly visible, depicting the My Lai Massacre, or the My Lai Massacre, actually. A flag is left for many months in strong sunlight, with an area the shape of a Nazi swastika protected from fading. The process and result are displayed. Or a magician burns a flag and dumps the remnants into a demonstrably empty can, then pulls an unblemished flag from the can. An artist displays an apparently mutilated flag consisting, in fact, of several intact flags variously folded. You can see where this is going. An artist displays a badly mutilated copy of the flag in cyan, black, and orange. A bright strobe light creates for viewers a red, white, and blue afterimage. A thoroughly indestructible metallic flag is soaked with a flammable liquid and burned. A protester wall mounts a large flag behind cellophane, then paints or smears obscenities on the transparent covering. How about this? A computer animation programmer creates a realistic video of what seems to be a flag burning to charred shreds. Protesters take flags to Canada or to the grounds of a foreign embassy, mutilate them, and bring them back. Dissidents with video equipment broadcast live to the mainland a flag desecration taking place on a private ship on the high seas. A group of consenting adults gathers for a private ceremony of anger and lament. Flags are torn and burned. A mangled flag is hung in a private dwelling in such a way that it can be seen from a public sidewalk with slight or moderate or extreme difficulty. Someone constructs an already desecrated flag by sewing together burned fragments of red, white, and blue cloth. Demonstrators burn bunches of red, white, and blue streamers, copies of the Bill of Rights, maps of the United States, or pictures of Uncle Sam. And finally, an artist uses 1,000 tiny flags as minute elements in an obscene picture. All those, could they be seen as violations of the flag desecration law passed in October? Again, that was from a pamphlet called Scenarios and Questions for Anti-Flag Desecration Lawmakers, put out by Ken Naughton and Barbara Bean Naughton of Merrimack, New Hampshire, and it was printed in a recent edition, I believe the current edition of Harper's Magazine, and our thanks to them for sending that over to us. Now, there's all kinds of other ways, as I mentioned before, of having fun with this, and, you know, it's a serious issue, yeah, but that doesn't mean you can't have fun with it. And I've come up with lots of possible scenarios, solutions. I mean, why don't we simply make it a law that all flags be made out of completely indestructible material? You can't burn it. You can't rip it. You can't destroy it in any way. It lasts forever. Maybe we can make it nuclear radioactive of some sort, you know, with a 10,000-year half-life or something. You know, all flags are radioactive. No one's going to want to go near it to touch it in the first place. Okay, that could work. Or, how about this? You make it so that the flags are extremely flammable. In fact, if you light them, they explode in your face. And anyone who tries is killed instantly. So, you know, not many people will want to do that. Or burning a flag requires a permit by the fire marshal because it causes such explosions and things like that, and the fire marshal is instructed by the government never to give such a permit. And therefore, if you burn a flag, you're in violation of a fire code, which not many people will see as a violation of democracy. They should come to me first. You know, I have all these solutions. How about this? We simply change our way of looking at things, and instead of it being a form of abuse, we make burning the flag into the ultimate show of respect. You patriotic American, you like the flag? Go out there and burn it. And as it's erupting in splendid flame and smoke, you just think of the glory, the bombs bursting in air. You know, the raging fires by Old Glory and all that kind of thing. Old Faithful, I meant to say, I'm sorry. It's just, you change the rules around. So that's one of my solutions, one of many solutions that I've come up with, and I'm surprised that more imaginative types have not secured these solutions so that this won't be a problem. What do you think? 279-3400. By the way, I just wanted to do this one thing here. I tore out a little piece of paper from today's New York Times. It doesn't say anything on it. It's completely blank. But what I am now doing is drawing a rectangle on it. And up in the little corner there, I'm drawing another little rectangle, which I'll put some dots to represent stars. Okay, and then I'll draw some lines to represent the stripes. And here I have a representation of the American flag. A symbol, if you will, of our country. This piece of paper that I'm holding, it's not a very nice-looking flag, but nonetheless, what is a flag? It's a symbol. And this is a symbol, if I've ever seen one. Listen. What have I just done? Are there going to be police officers waiting for me now? Have I broken the law? Have I committed the ultimate sin? Am I being very silly? I think so. And I think we all are being a bit silly if we believe this kind of nonsense. So how do we put an end to it? That's the question I have. 279-3400. That's our telephone number. Area code 212. What do you think of the flag burning issue? Do you think it's an issue at all? And how do we get out of it now if we have made a mistake? Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Good show.
Thank you.
I'm actually against these flag burners because they're just playing into the hands of George Bush and the flag wavers. It's like if there was no such thing as flag burners, George Bush would have to hire some people to do it.
Well, maybe he has. That's a good point.
He's the one who most wants to see flags burned, so he can exploit it.
It certainly does help him, doesn't it? I mean, look, if these people, if Joey Johnson was not there, I mean, I always suspect these things when these horrible terrorist actions occur. And this is just, you know, it's just a theory. But it sure benefits those in power when these horrible things happen that bring us all together. And of course, you know, I don't really believe that, but it doesn't hurt to have people out there burning flags so that they can make laws like this and bring us all together.
Just like what's happening in Europe, in a sense. It's the last thing the Bush administration, especially the Pentagon, wants. They decided to build the MX, the Stealth, the Trident, and they need an excuse. Mm-hmm. And don't think they won't find it.
Now, it's going to be kind of hard now with all these people rallying for peace and everything, but I'm sure, you know,
it
seems like we're trying to find another war somewhere. If it's not in El Salvador or Philippines, we'll find one. We'll just keep looking.
But also, burning the flag does hurt people emotionally. If an issue is made out of it, it shouldn't, but it does. Since people have been conditioned into believing that the flag stands for all they think is good, burning it really causes them. Evolved to our level of being informed, they don't deserve to be emotionally attacked.
Well, yeah, I don't like to look at it that way, evolving to our level, but certainly not seeing it in the same light that we see it. And that's, they're being cheated because they're not being tolerant. And yes, if everybody or if those that were offended simply ignored the people that were being offensive to them, everybody could go about their business. I mean, when someone is offensive to me, I don't make a federal case out of it. I try to ignore it and get on with my life. And, you know, if they're doing something that violates somebody's rights, clearly, obviously, I'll take action against that. But
yeah, but if you think it has implications, like you mentioned freedom of speech for neo-Nazis, is it hurting anyone? Do you think Jewish people or anyone hearing neo-Nazis are thinking of freedom of speech or the anguish of their memories?
Of course, but no one is forcing them to listen, and they can just walk away and turn their backs on it, and if it's, you know...
But they think it has implications about the country becoming like that. They're going to be anguished about it.
Right, but if there are implications like that, simply banning the speech or banning the meeting is not going to take those away. You know, they have to look deeper. You know, and if there is something seriously wrong with the country that makes people want to burn flags, then obviously sooner or later that's going to have to be addressed.
Also, the flag burners are not making their point. If the flag doesn't stand for all that's good, why, from the flag burner's point of view, does it stand for all that's bad that the government has done?
Uh-huh. Well, to them it does. I can't say I agree with them, you know, but I do see a point in what they're saying.
But the flag wavers are not getting the message.
Obviously not.
They think it's just a contradiction to what they believe in, all that's good. They're not understanding that these flag burners are saying that the country has done some bad things.
Uh-huh.
To see them as the opposite of what they believe in.
And in a very big sense, it makes things a lot harder for people that don't burn flags but do criticize the government to continue doing so, because then they're looked upon in the same light. But in a sense, perhaps this is something that we have to go through to reexamine our values a bit.
I just think these flag burners are too self-righteous, even though they're probably correct on the individual issues they bring up, and they're unfeeling.
Uh-huh. But again, as I said to the other caller, that's not relevant to the issue. You know, it's a question of do they have the right or don't they?
Do they have the right? No. Well,
what do you think? Do they have the right?
Well, if they really believe that, if they really don't want people to burn flags, I think the worst thing they could have done was made a law, because it would have been isolated if
exactly.
They hadn't.
I mean, we would have forgotten about this already, you know, a week afterwards. We would have forgotten about it, and people aren't exactly rushing out to the stores to buy flags to burn them. I haven't noticed that.
It was simply George Bush's campaign thing. He needed people, and he knew that most people would rally around him.
And it's gotten way out of hand, and it's wasted a lot of time and money. And we should be talking about more important things. I realize that. But this is something that, you know, if unchecked, it could lead to a lot more. And I hope it doesn't, but it could.
Okay, thank you. It's a great show.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
Yes, I have to comment on this flag business.
Go ahead.
Am I on the air yet?
Yes, you are.
All right. First of all, about Joe Schmo, I was just talking. People have the right to do it. It's a piece of cloth. Why can't they burn it? I don't understand this.
Uh-huh.
So, what I think is everybody has the right to do what they want out there, and I think that guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, I don't think he was disagreeing with that so much.
Yeah.
He was just raising some more issues about the motives of the people that were burning the flags.
Now, who are these people that were burning the flags that he said?
Well, we've been airing some speeches by some Vietnam veterans against the war.
Yeah.
Dave Blalock and Joey Johnson. And Joey Johnson was the person that originally started this whole Supreme Court action. It was his case that was ruled upon this past summer, and the Supreme Court, in fact, had agreed with him, and that's what started this whole controversy.
Uh-huh.
So there are other people, I'm sure, that burn flags, but those are the most famous ones.
Because I'm in a neighborhood, and I've seen a couple of kids burning a flag, and a bunch of blacks went and beat them up.
Uh-huh.
So, and I think that was, you know...
Well, what does that tell you?
What does that tell me? I think it was wrong and right. I don't think the guys should have beat them up. I think they should have asked them why they were burning the flag.
Uh-huh.
And, so I went over there and tried to talk to the guys, but, they almost, you know, beat me up too, so...
They did, or they were going to?
They were going to, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I was
going
to try and stop them and everything, but, no, they weren't listening. So I think a lot of blacks are not into that flag business.
Well, I don't, you know, I think it crosses racial and religious lines. You know, nationalism is not something that's confined to one group of people. You know, and it might seem strange to some people that minority groups would be patriotic or nationalistic, but I don't find that strange. You know?
Yeah. All right, well, I just want to express my opinions and everything.
Okay.
And I'll see you later.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
You have to look at situations like that and say, you know, who was wrong there? I mean, when someone uses physical force to make their point, I think they've automatically forfeited whatever it is they were trying to prove. Because once you resort to that, you know, why? Why must you resort to that? You ever wonder? You know, it's because you can't put it into words. And it's not because it's something so magical and wonderful that can't possibly be expressed in our language. It's just... you can't think of something to justify. You get upset, and so you lash out with your fists, and that's more of a problem, I think, than someone that's simply doing something symbolic. I mean, all it is a symbol. I mean, if they set a flag on fire and it has a post office attached to it or something, I could see being a little bit angry. But this is only a symbol, and if you don't agree, walk the other way. That's how we get through every day of our lives. I don't see why I should stop with a piece of cloth that represents our nation. 279-3400. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, the brothers that were talking about the flag burning, I have something here. If it'll take a moment just to read it. It was, who was Medley Butler? Have you ever heard of this?
Oh, well, make it quick, okay, because we got a lot of calls to go to.
Generals in America, as described by General Douglas MacArthur. He was small, he was round-shouldered, he barely weighed 140 pounds, dripping wet, and even when he was dry, his uniform seemed to hang off him like an oversized bathing suit. He never fought in one of our major wars. Yet this unlike model for a recruiting poster was once described by no less a martial figure than General MacArthur of the armies as one of the great generals in American history. The warrior was Smedley Butler, a legendary, almost archetypical Marine. He fought in his country's battles from China to the Caribbean, winning 2 Medal of Honors. He would have won a third, but regulations did not permit it at the time. In an age when Americans regarded fighting with almost a total approval, Butler was a reckless battler, charging forward like Shakespeare's Coriolanus, without ever looking to see if his men were following. In Butler's case, it was always there because they loved him. Higher ups, by contrast, tended not to, for he was a cantankerous, unorthodox, and hated military punctuello, and a prissy civilian regulation. He hated these things. Smedley Butler, in short, was the perfect real-life model of a fighting leatherneck, suitable for framing, say, in an earlier John Wayne movie about a time of innocence, more innocent than today. Now, what does he say, as described by himself in his article for Common Sense, the magazine of the time, in November of 1935? I spent 33 years and 4 months in active service as a member of our country's most agile military force, the Marine Corps. I served in all the commissioned ranks from second lieutenant to a major general. And during that period, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer for capitalism. Thus, I helped make Mexico and especially Tampico safe for American interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues. I helped in raping half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking houses of the Brown Brothers in 1909 and 1912. I fought for the right of the Dominican Republic in America for the sugar interest in 1916. I helped make Honduras right for American fruit companies in 1903.
Okay, sir. I get the gist of this. Can you, in your own words and very short...
wrap the flag around themselves most of the time to commit the worst kinds of crime. whether they're German flags, American flags, or any other kind.
It was all done in the name of a flag, in other words.
Pardon me?
It was done in the name of a flag.
Well, that's the greatest symbol of a country who uses nationalism as a criminal movement. They bring it together.
Uh-huh.
And the people coalesce behind something that has been symbolically fed to them from the time of their birth to then.
So you see a very real danger in a flag, in other words.
I see a danger in anything that people adhere to without thought.
Very good point.
Thinking is the main factor that people need to protect themselves from these democratic, kind of attitudes that people put out there. Whether you're talking about that congressman back there or one of these here Ku Klux Klanners nowadays or black nationalists or anyone else.
Uh-huh.
People must be able to think to function properly for their own betterment and society's betterment.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. That's what it's all about. That's what democracy in action is about, thinking first. And I don't think we're encouraged to think very much at all these days. And that's
why you're able to think, though. Thinking feeds thinking. And the moment you stultify that or you cripple it, the thinking becomes distorted because anyone can misuse it. And if you go back and look at any of these pictures of Hitler and his flags and his banners and all of this kind of pulling people together, how did Italy get people together out of these things? It's a symbol of people adhering to a common cause. And this is what they've been fed from their mother's milk. Follow the flag. Like right now, if you want to get people upset, you just start desecrating a few of the crosses and stars of Islam and Jewish Star of David's. Any symbol is used to bring a people together for a purpose. And most of the time, people misuse the purpose for their own selfish needs.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling, sir, and for bringing up those points. Good morning.
No.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, I'm a flag burner. But not all flag burners can be put into one category. I'm from a generation that learned that the only proper way to dispose of a flag was to burn it. So this might be interesting. I am a summer resident at a beach community, and I'd say that about 3/4 of my neighbors fly the flag every day. And we did too when my children were small. Now, because of the wind and the salt air and the telegraph poles and things like that, the flags are pretty shredded by the end of the year. And we save them for the next July 4th bonfire. And these old flags are put into the bonfire that we have on the beach.
And I'll bet you're not going to do that next year.
Oh, we did it this July 4th.
Uh-huh. Are you going to do it next July 4th?
Well, I'm sure we will, because it's all done in a reverent attitude, and it's only doing what we were taught to do.
Right, but do you feel uneasy now doing that?
No, there was no uneasiness at all, because this is a tradition, and it's just a sanctified way of disposing of a flag, which really brings up the idiocy of the law, because what anybody would have to do would approach us and say, what are you thinking of as you were doing this? And then we bring them this horrible specter of thought police, because on one hand, a large group of the population was taught that the only proper way to dispose of a flag is to burn it. Which brings up something else. I think we all remember the Republican convention, and everybody had a little flag, you know, when they were adoring Bush there, and they were waving little flags, and we've seen these demonstrations before. And I wonder if those people were advised by, say, Bush, on how to properly dispose of those flags.
That's a real good point, because we see flags every day.
Garbage with the sandwiches and the paper plates or something.
Yeah.
I think somebody should ask him how he disposes of it.
As long as they're making such an issue of it, I don't see any reason why not to ask those questions. And, you know, you see flags on McDonald's bags. You see them, you know, everywhere in the stores. There's a lot of flags to get rid of. And I don't know if you saw Doonesbury a few weeks ago. He printed a flag, in the comic strip.
Right.
And, you know, it posed a very real question. How do you get rid of this? You can't. There's no way to. Under this law, it's illegal to throw it out or to desecrate it in any way. So it raises a lot of fun points to pursue, and I'm all for pursuing those.
I just might add one little poignant thing. I had a visitor from north of Ireland, a niece of mine, and as we were at this bonfire and the flag was burning and everything, somebody said off a repeating firecracker, you know, about 25 yards away or something like that. And she fell down on the ground because she says, oh, it's a shooting. See, she has been raised, you know, to
right.
The end of guns. And I thought it was a very poignant lesson for my children. I said, this flag was born under British guns, and this girl here is still under the threat. She has been raised hearing British guns, and she just, they haven't had their Independence Day yet. And I thought, I turned it into a positive lesson for them.
That's good, and I think we can get a positive lesson here, too. Thanks very much for calling. Good morning. Is anyone there? Okay, I guess they fell asleep at the phone. Good morning.
Hi, it's the first time I've heard your program, and I'm against flag burning for three reasons. It's an indirect statement. It's a hypocritical statement. It's an antagonistic statement. It's indirect because I believe myself in a lot of people's minds that the flag stands for so much more than the Vietnam War, not to belittle the war, but it stands for getting rid of that evil Hitler. It stands for getting rid of slavery, or at least getting rid of the worst part of slavery.
Well, of course, for one time it stood for slavery too, though, you see.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But I see your point. It stands for what we get out of it in the end, is what you're saying, right?
Okay, but I think everybody has like a grandfather who maybe, or everybody knows somebody who maybe pioneered the West, or they have a grandfather that helped build a bridge and he died building the bridge, and people relate the flag to those things too. It's like, and just the whole idea of freedom, and it's like, I've never seen anybody burn a flag, but my reaction would be, I'm not going to say, oh, that guy's burning the flag because he doesn't believe in what we're doing in El Salvador, or that guy's burning the flag because he doesn't like what happened in Vietnam. I'm going to think, my reaction is going to be, okay, you son of a gun, you don't like this country and everything this country stands for, so why are you here?
Well, I mean, that's a question that's asked quite often, but again, is it really relevant? You know, I mean, yeah, he's here, he's burning the flag, he's showing disrespect for the country, but doesn't he have the right to do that? And if we question his right to be here, aren't we being kind of hypocritical? And I'm afraid that you're going to have to answer that in about 10 seconds.
Okay, well, I think they're being hypocritical because I don't like a lot of destruction that's going on in this country either, but the actual burning of the flag is a destructive thing to do, and they're just not making a point. Like someone said before, they're missing the mark.
One final question, and we have to go. Do you think the law is justified?
No, I don't, because I think it would take up too much time in court that we need for other things.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling.
Bye.
And good night. I'm afraid we're going to have to make that our last call. And it's time for us to go. My name's Emmanuel Goldstein. I've been filling in for Tom Whisker, and I'll be back next week filling in for him for the last time. And we'll talk about something completely different. Thanks to everybody who called in, and keep thinking, keep talking about this. And I'd like to go out with a piece by a band called The Specials that sort of sums up my whole view on this and on everything else. Whatever you think in the end, whatever you do, it's all up to you. Good night.
up to you what you really want to do. While you were standing on the corner giving trouble, when the policeman comes, he says you'll have to move on the double. Yeah. So stepping up to speed with my little rook up, with a place to her anchor. It's up to her what she really want to do. It's up to you, you, and strictly you and you. What you gonna do when morons come to you and they won't go away? They want the whole world painted gray. We'll be right back.
why we're gonna go back. To 1940, no money, and I live in Berlin. I think I'll join up, but become a camp guard. No war for me. An old Jew's face dripping red. I hate the prisoners, I hate the officers, the no fight. I think I'll join a red rose, a Lee Belson, I'll go to Switzerland. Human rights, human rights, don't think said Ian in his black outdress. I think I'll drop out, become a no man, and live my rules. But I'm the sort that gets out of the back with a dirty face. Everyone I mean to say now, are no brains or thoughts. I could take for the systems, how we like, how we get. Full of lead, and the beer is so weak. Since they got rid of time around here. Dr. Doom, fresh from Salem, and the witch trials.